This edition of the Car Wash is brought to you by Gillette Skin Guard. Gillette Skin Guard is the razor you've been looking for. This is the first razor designed specifically for men with sensitive skin. It shaves hair and protects the skin thanks to its unique new Skin Guard technology positioned between the blades. Say goodbye to razor bumps and skin irritation with Gillette Skin Guard.
Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Sokola Duma Radio. This is Ahlangana Khona.
Okay, so episode 8 of the car wash. As you may recognize, the voice is a bit different to Slu Paho, your usual host. It's Clint Roper standing in for Slu today. It is a great honor to be part of this car wash show. The final one of 2019. In studio, as always, we have co-host Sean Roberts.
Thank you.
And Teko Medise.
Bye, donkey.
And the first ever car wash guest live that we have in studio, the legend himself, Matthew Booth. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to have my boot on the desk there as well. Size 15.
Yeah. That's why it's still so clean. You just used to head the ball.
Hello.
All right, guys. I think let's get straight into it. I think Telkom Cup final is the one that we're talking about first up.
Yeah.
Is that right? What did you guys think of the game? I thought Sundowns a little lucky to come away with it in the end.
Could have gone anyway. Take all you work today. You were at the game. Mm-hmm. Just behaving in Durban as usual. Offside or not offside? That's the question. Maddie, did you watch it?
Yeah, I felt from the correct camera angle, he was offside.
Yeah.
But more importantly, the episode just before that, a couple of minutes before that, where they had another offside decision where they got into another dangerous moment, I felt that was onside. And they had a good shout in scoring, you know, from that position. But obviously, everybody was talking about the last episode. But I felt that was just offside. Yeah.
Monsieur Mary as well, on fire.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're all talking about VAR and what it could do for the PSL. I watched one of the magazine shows last night, Extra Time, I think it was. And they showed that they actually got it, the linesman got it spot on, that the attacker was 3.5 meters away from the end line and the defender was 4 meters away from the end line, which means he was offside. The question is, if that happened in the other box, and it was a Sundowns player scoring a goal to equalize, would the linesman have been as brave
juicy
and raised his
juicy
flag? And I think that's possibly where that's possibly where Maritzburg United don't get the rub of the green, as they say in that particular instance.
That linesman wasn't convinced himself. I mean, he's holding that flag like.
But it was a big decision, man.
It was the right decision.
Yeah.
It was the right decision.
Brave decision, correct decision. Does he make it on the other side of the field with Putsuma Samane, the coach, if it was a Sundowns guy scoring the equalizer, Teko?
Well, definitely not. We all know that. But I think on the game itself, I mean, Maritzburg started very, very well. I think
they're pushing the ball around so nicely.
Yeah, the tactics were better. And, you know, there's different personnel in the team that actually makes the team now no longer being that predictable before, because we used to, like, you know, play those long balls using pace in front, but now you've got your Keegan, your team in the midfield, your Klassen, you know, they've got that one touch play, like those moments where they played very, very well. And looking at the Sundowns team, I thought, you know, Sundowns with those players on the pitch, they actually to force dominance, you know, Maritzburg will end up being that defensive side, but it wasn't the case. And
they had nothing to lose, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah. It was almost a reversal of roles. It looked like Maritzburg were playing piano and shoeshine at one stage, and Sundowns were going the aerial
route. That era of piano, shoeshine, and Sundowns is long gone. We all know that.
Yeah.
But anyway, second half, and I think Sundowns came back being a different team. You know, they started maybe being causing a little bit of threat, but still, Maritzburg was playing better. But after Sundowns scored that first goal, it became a problem. And then again, they score with, you know, two headers. They never actually created open chances to actually score. That's how difficult it was for them. I think I also said on Friday on the show that if you give Sundowns position, they might not do anything about it because then they're looking for that space behind, and Maritzburg wasn't giving them space behind. So let Sundowns play in front of you. And then you're going to probably have joy because now you're forcing them to actually put your right back and left back to be in advanced position. Mm-hmm. Then you're creating that space to actually attack. And that's why Mr. Midi was having so much joy. And yeah, I mean, that controversial decision. Yeah. Like from where we were sitting, actually, I thought it was a goal. You know, I was like, yo.
Labusta should have had a penalty as well.
Yeah.
That was a clean penalty.
Definitely, yeah. That was a clear penalty. But I thought, you know, when we were sitting, actually speaking about it, we're like, oh, that's a goal. But then the slow-mo, you know, then realized that that was a big decision. And normally referees don't get it right at that time, you know. But I thought if you'd have asked me, I was like, giving advantage to a team that actually attacks, they'd be too full. Let's go with extra time. Let's have fun more. But anyway, it was a great game.
And good old friend Julia pressing Eric. At the end of the game,
Eric was so.
Oh, he wasn't chuffed. Eh?
Eric was, but also I didn't like what Pizzo said. Actually, you know, like him saying that we're benefiting, and all that stuff, which means he's condoning the bad refereeing as well. Just because it's on his side this time around and he wants to celebrate it, I think if we want to deal with certain issues, especially about the referees, let's be consistent about them. You know, and being the person that you are, you must understand how big Pizzo is. I don't think at times you understand what kind of a person he is, what he means to South African football, not only in South Africa, but in the continent as well. So whatever that he says, people actually take it.
Sure.
So he needs to actually be mindful of what he said and how he says it. It's no longer just a coach from Vela team. You know?
Did you see a celebration as well at the end of the game?
Yeah. The Messi celebration.
Looking like Jesus.
Yeah.
Look, I think, Teko, you hit the nail on the head there with regards to consistency. That's all we ask from the officials. So I felt that the linesman got it right in that with the Mosimeri goal being offside. But then the decision before that, I felt was a poor one, which could have led to another goal for Maritzburg. But what struck me was the confidence of Mosimeri after his two goals against Chiefs, the way he's been playing since then. He really busts Labusa and company. Absolutely. In that first
powerful.
Half.
He's a powerful, powerful player.
And what also struck me was the fact that Onyango and Ofori, who I really rate, top goalkeepers, they made two errors leading up to that. You know, with Labusa covering Mosimedi, there was no reason for Nyonga to come out.
Oh.
And then Ofori misjudging their first goal. So that was a little bit disappointing from two quality goalkeepers.
Yeah, two of the best keepers in the league, for
without
sure.
Without a doubt.
It was a strange one.
Yeah, I mean, Teko makes a good point. You do give Sundowns the ball and they can play in front of you. You can get behind them. And we know Patrice is a massive fan of Barcelona. He's flown them out twice to play against his team.
Mm-hmm.
And Barcelona get accused of the same thing at times, where they just play in front of you, they don't hurt you. I think what is very cool is that Pizzo has found a way to win ugly, or plan B, if you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And for
which was the case.
A carpet-playing team like Sundowns are, to win with two headers, stick it in the box, one set piece, one open play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hats off to him to finding a different way.
Not
even Barcelona have done that yet. So hats off to Pizzo.
Hell of a player, eh?
I know he's a good player. He's a good player. He knows how to hold on to the ball. He knows what to do with the ball. And like, if you look at the Mamelodi Sundowns lineup, you see Afonso, you know what's going to come. You know, and like Matthew said, you're looking at Ofori, you know that he's a big boy. You know, he should be commanding that area of presence, but he was not. And same with Onyango, the first take. Actually, Musiamedi could have scored, actually, with a similar goal that he scored. The first one where the Musa bumped into Onyango as well. Yes. It was the same thing. You
exactly
know,
the same thing.
Guiding the player from there, clear the ball, mate, bruh, and then let's come back and defend. But because Musiamedi was such a problem that day, it made it difficult for Labusa to deal with him. And it's very surprising to see Musiamedi playing like that. I played with Musiamedi for 2 years. Dude, I've never even seen half of the stuff that he's doing right now.
Seriously?
And I actually told him before the game, I told him on Friday, I'm like, oh, now you're playing for Maritzburg. Now he's going through against Chiefs. You never even scored a training. Yeah,
crazy, yeah.
But it shows, you know, that the trust that they have on him, Eric, you know, maybe the environment for him that side is way better. And you can see, like, he's growing now, he's confident, and it was amazing to actually see that. Because I thought Maritzburg actually is a final, the stage is too big for them. Sundowns players have been in similar situations for a long time, and probably maybe Maritzburg might freeze a little bit. If they start well, and then maybe they might get into the game, but they play like...
Well, it'll be nice to see that consistency with Maritzburg now going into the league.
Yeah.
Because when they play, you actually enjoy watching them, you know?
Yeah.
But they've been too inconsistent in the league.
Phenomenal. But you're right. They didn't shirk their responsibility. They brought a game plan and they were brave enough to play that kind of football.
Yeah.
Great to see.
What I've noticed against Sundowns as well, they're two games over Golden Arrows. When they play against a three-man midfield, they kind of struggle to a certain extent. True. And a lot of the teams dominate it with regards to possession and crowd them out in that midfield. And with Maritzburg, they definitely played with a back four for a change. Sometimes I watch them and I think to myself, what are they playing at the back? You know, because Ngonyama sometimes slots in when they're under pressure. Morgan as well.
Yeah.
They definitely play with a back four, three in the midfield. That Tim, Klaassen and Buchanan midfield looks quality.
Very, very good.
And I think that's something that coaches have picked up against Sundowns, is trying to dominate them in the midfield with three men.
And also on that, Matthew, at certain areas and certain moments, you find the Maritzburg wingbacks will come back and form a line of six at the back. Mm. So now you're forcing Sundowns to actually play. But then again, at Sundowns, even though they've got so many good midfielders, they don't have a person that actually can pass those through balls. Mm. Except for Sompo, when he plays deeper, then he plays those long balls. But for a team that's playing in the block to actually force those penetrative passes, sometimes they don't have a player like that. Hence him saying that if you give them position, you defend in the block, they find it very difficult to actually penetrate. And then it forced now your Serino to do the individuals, your Temba.
Yeah, you get to rely on him a bit more.
Yeah. But then what was nice about it was, like, with Sundowns, you know that Moreno will forever come, Langerman will forever come, but they were... Maritzburg had threats with the speed, with Kunene and the other boy on the right. So now they forced Langerman to stay deeper. They forced Morena to stay deeper. So now what they were relying on was Andile and Temba Zwane and Serena to do the work. Hence, they tried it. But when Maritzburg had the ball, they knew exactly what to do with the ball. Because sometimes we're defending deep. Teams that are actually defend deep, when they have the ball, they start kicking forward, it comes back again. Yeah. So now you're giving Sundowns a dominance. But with Maritzburg, they had a game plan. And Eric is doing very, very well.
So are you saying Sundowns are missing a navigator?
No, man. One Peter to come. No, it's just that now they're playing differently. That's a fact. They're playing differently. And
differently, you meaning too predictable?
We can't say they're too predictable because they're a team that are leading in South Africa. So it makes it easy for us to actually start looking at them differently and try to figure out what is it that you actually need to do.
Do you think playing on the continent is affecting the way they play, that they're coming back with something different?
I think it improves them. I think it improves the team in knowing exactly that when to win and how to win. Because I remember at some stage at Sundowns, we always wanted to play the same way. And once we started being involved in the, you know, in Champions League, we started having a different mentality. Because now when you get there, you don't know what the pitch, the condition of the pitch are like. So you can't rely on passing football. So you need to find different dynamics of playing. And from that, we learned a lot. When it came to local, whenever we had difficulties, we'll resort to the Champions League mentality. We'll find ways out to win. So I think for them to be always there, I think it improves the team. That's why you can see them, that they can win a game in the 90th minute. They can win the game in the first minute. And they know that they're going to win. Yeah. So they don't panic and they don't resort to anything different. But it's just that my disappointment over the weekend was Maritzburg knew that Afonso is there.
Yeah.
So there's no way that they're going to use space behind. So they need to deal with those crosses coming in. And I was actually hoping that Ofori will be the one that actually brings them into the game, because he has saved Maritzburg so much.
Plenty.
And I thought that with the mistake that he did.
The cross from open play, you can't really fault him. Obviously, the keeper made the wrong decision, possibly should have come out with two hands or try to cover.
Just a bit more aggressive.
A bit more physical. But from a set piece, yes, it's a big boy you're marking, but you don't have to win the ball. All you got to do is deny the space for him to win the ball.
Exactly.
And that's maybe where
that was a bloody good header, hey?
A bit better.
So he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
I think Mosiemedi must take, I think it was him that was marking Afonso, and that for the second one. And that just shows me that Maritzburg perhaps lack a little bit of presence at the back. A striker who's done so much work up front for you.
Yeah.
He's got to drop back in and mark the big man.
Correct. Yeah. And just deny him the space to get into the, as you say, don't have to win the header. But that's Telkom Cup. Hats off to Pitsa. Some more silverware. Incredible.
Sure.
Mr. Matthew Booth, we have a tradition here at the car wash called 10 quick fire questions, which we usually pre-record, but
for the first time ever.
The first time ever, we are live doing this live.
Are you ready, my boy?
Our man at the helm is Sean Roberts.
10 questions, chilled.
Okay.
Okay, my boy.
Go for it.
Funniest guy in the PSL you've played with?
Besides yourself.
There must be some really unfunny people in the PSL.
I'd probably have to say Muneeb Josephs.
Yeah. Flashiest dresser.
Okay, flashiest. I must say, Teko's up there. You know, he's quite well dressed. Well dressed. I wouldn't say flashy.
I love the bow tie that Teko sometimes wears. That's when he really takes it to the next level.
I don't. I think I work with Stanton Fredericks and Jimmy Town. They know their cloth. Yeah, okay. As well.
Worst dressed. Besides yourself, you've always got that like a little belt. Remember that animal belt?
Must be a lot of animal to make that belt, by the way.
At Cape Town Spurs, I had a guy called Patty Lacoste. He was from Congo. And yeah, I know he was just some expression. He can never get it right.
Worst mistake in a match?
I think under 20s World Youth Champs in Malaysia. I gave a nice little back pass to Thierry Henry, and he ran through and scored for my mistake.
Really?
I'll never forget that. Yeah.
I think he's done that to a couple of big central defenders in his life.
So I wouldn't take it too hard.
Company.
Teammate who thinks he's funny, but he's actually not.
Probably Cole Alexander.
His name's come up before, I think.
Yeah, I think we've had that
he's
one
poor.
Before.
He's poor. Best footballing memory.
That's pretty easy. I think that was Brazil in the Olympics 2000, 3-1 win. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was an incredible moment for South African football.
Yeah, yeah.
We thought we had arrived when you guys did that, but then Japan came next, I think it was.
Well, it was Japan first, and then we lost to Slovakia, which is typical Slovakia, South Africa, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rise to the occasion against the big boys, and then...
Story of our lives, eh?
Yeah.
Best goal in a match, or most important goal?
Probably... I've got this on an old VHS cassette. I don't think anybody would have believed me, but I scored from outside the box against Kwakwa Stars, against Botende Ashele. Remember him?
I don't.
And I ran off the field and I got a yellow card because I just couldn't believe it myself.
Who were you playing for then?
Cape Town Spurs.
Your favorite car? Doesn't necessarily be the car you have, but your favorite car.
I'm driving an Audi A5 at the moment, and it's the first time I've actually bought two consecutive A5s because I love the shape so much. I'm enjoying that.
Favorite local food?
Beside my wife's.
What does she cook?
Oh, everything. She's good at everything. This is live and recording, right?
Be careful, Matthew. Yeah,
we've got to run on the line right now.
But yeah, it's a difficult one. I like bit of Indian, Mexican, Thai.
And food? You
know. Oh, wow.
Very spicy. Quick questions today.
And favorite holiday destination?
Anywhere down to the coast. Cape Town, Durban, Wild Coasts.
Yeah. Nothing abroad? You mainly stay in the country?
What about broads?
Abroad, yeah. Don't you like Morocco?
Yeah. North African, the architecture is fantastic. Love the food as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, eh? But Matty, just in general now, you looking at launching a book. You're doing a lot of TV work. You've just finished your studies. What's sort of exciting you at the moment? What's the next step for Matthew Booth?
Yeah, just from an education point of view, I'm also on a couple of panels, the PSL Disciplinary Committee, also the SAIDS guys, South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport, the guys who used to test us. So just from an education point of view and having to read up on legislation and, you know, constitutions and stuff like that.
What happens if you get found out with drugs?
Well,
what's the step?
For example, I mean, you're a first-time offender who gets caught having perhaps smoked marijuana, which is quite probably the most common case for footballers. We don't really get caught with hardcore recreational or recreational stuff. So, just from affordability, that's never really been our issue. You know?
But how is marijuana performance enhancing? Like, how did you know what I mean?
It's not necessarily, but it can be a danger to your fellow players, guys who you're playing with and against. You know, obviously,
like if
it's
you
not
burn
a good
them
idea.
In the change room or something.
Not a good idea to be playing high. So, first time offenders, you normally get 6 months sentence. And then a 2-year, and then a 4-year. If you get caught with cocaine or something heavier. Steroids, etc. That can be an immediate 4-year ban. So, sure. Yeah, a lot of footballers believe that in the off season you can smoke dacha, and it's easier. It's easy to get rid of it by the time you start training again, and that's not the case. Each one to their own. So rather just not risk it. I mean, it's 6 months, you know, of income. that's going out your pocket. So rather not risk it and just wait until you retire if you want to indulge.
Talking about 6 months of income and PSL disciplinary committee, the McCullough case, you were not involved in that?
No, nothing at all. They've got a quite a high rotation and a big pool of professionals, normally lawyers, advocates, guys in the medical profession. They've only got a couple of ex-players. Idris Burton is another one. So it's just a case of having somebody that is kind of in your corner or knows what you've gone through, a sympathetic ear. But yeah, I've observed a case, but I haven't sat on one yet.
So yeah, we were speaking about studies. So what's next?
Yeah, I think
you've just finished, eh?
I've got to get my finger out with regards to the book. I'm really keen on that project. Whether I self-publish or not, I want to do it. The book is I've interviewed 16 football personalities. I wanted to get half of each chapter as funny anecdotes that they've experienced throughout their career. And then the other half, life lessons, whether it be finances or girls, alcohol or drugs or whatever. And I've had some incredible stories so far. So I want to get that published. There's going to be some great pictures in it as well, Sean, so just for you. And then I'm also involved with an artificial grass company up in Johannesburg. And I feel with our, you know, in this area, in this region, just from the water savings point of view and from a developmental point of view, I know growing up, you know, the type of fields that we had to play on, to now have the true run of the ball, to be able to have kids develop good technical skills. I think it's vitally important.
Just with the book, Matthew, I've read a couple of chapters you've sent to me and got my feedback. And I think it's going to be an incredible read for South African soccer fans, but for the greater South African audience as well, because not all of the people who possibly read that are soccer players per se, but would be interested in life stories. And in terms of getting this book off the ground, what is it that you're needing? Is there a sponsor that needs to come on board perhaps that can help you get this published so that we can make a bigger deal about it? And possibly they're listening to this.
Yeah, again, because I've just finished my studies now, can I concentrate on something like this? And retiring from football, I find it difficult to even write up a proposal to corporates. I didn't know how to do it. You know, I had to learn about it. You know, this is something that footballers should be able to do immediately, you know, and transition smoothly into something like this. So yeah, I've got to approach corporates. I've got to get a publisher on board, but that's not a necessity. You can self-publish as well. So yeah, a lot of the publishers get put off by the fact that it's a sports book, but I feel that it's got a wide appeal. It's not only for potential young professional players. Any sports fan that's interested in a athlete's psyche and what they have to go through, just from all of a sudden having that regimen taken away from you, not knowing what to do with your life, you know, not being in a team environment anymore psychologically, that's a huge blow. But the one aspect of this book, you know, the one theme that runs through all the chapters is that players, professional, youngsters, kids, they need to learn how to persevere. You know, there's things in life which you don't need to be talented at, arriving on time, things like that, because the talent pool is so small and tight globally. It's often things like arriving on time, being determined, persevering, that put you apart from somebody that's even more talented than you.
Yeah.
And I think
staying for that extra half an hour training or whatever.
That was the main theme that was running through this book, besides, you know, all the other interesting anecdotes.
I mean, you imagine a Jabu Mahlangu or a Jeanette Hartley read this book as a kid, where they could have got to.
They're probably in the book, eh?
Yeah, you know, Jabu's told his story already. Yeah. I think it's well documented what happened with him. So I've got some other interesting personalities that have told me some incredible stuff, and that hopefully the public will find interesting as well.
And coaching, have you ever thought about coaching?
So myself and Sonia, we started an MPO in 2009.
Yeah.
I actually did a coaching clinic in Franschhoek on a couple of days ago with Brent Carlos and David Cunnamere.
Yeah.
So again, most of it has been cash from myself and Sonia who have put it in and sort of try to keep the trust going. I mean, that's something that I would like to get corporates involved with as well. It's half book clubs and half coaching clinics. And there's a large pool of ex-players who haven't been incorporated into the industry, whether it's from the PSL or SAFA side, who have got 15, 20 years experience. And it's not, I don't think they're being utilized properly. So I've gotten them on board, and the kids absolutely love it, especially if they can remember who Matthew Booth is, or, you know, Cyril Nzam, or...
Yeah, well, you've got a face you can't forget.
McCone. No, yeah. Thank you.
Phenomenal. All right, we're about to get into my starter pack, but before we do, you brought up an interesting topic there. And this is massive, not just for professional football players, but all sports, is what happens when you call it a day? And it'd be interesting. We've got three players, recent legends of the game. If we take a snapshot right now, what's been the hardest transition from being a professional footballer, athlete, to becoming part of the regular population? Because not all of us can be coaches. Not all of us can be TV presenters. Yeah. Not all of us can. It's a difficult time. Having been at Sokolo Duma for 20 years, obviously, I've grown up with a lot of footballers that have come through, and I've seen them go from our front cover, guys like Steve Lekalea and Jabu, who dominated our front cover, to life after football. And it's not always a pretty picture. Guys like Tsova Lekazi, who should be like a Ryan Giggs, and these guys have got very, very comfortable lives. It's not easy. What's been the hardest thing for you? Let's go around this way. Sean, hardest thing about stepping away from the game and not being a professional athlete?
Yeah, I think... only really this year I've sort of released the ego. You know, it's okay not to be a professional soccer player now, and slowly gradually move into something else, which I'm doing. But I think being away from 40 guys every day, working 2 hours a day, and to be fair, getting paid to do something that you absolutely love, and now moving into reality, that's been the hardest thing for me. And still continues to be
hard. So being part of a tribe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also the feel of not having a purpose. Lack of purpose.
That's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Mr. Booth.
It's very surprising coming from you as well.
Being as the goalkeepers play a different sport to the rest of the footballers, by the way, because the tribe's even smaller. But
they're not footballers. They use their hands.
Yeah. Matthew, what's been the hardest thing for you? Obviously, you've busied yourself with improving yourself, education, getting involved in a lot of good work outside of football. But there has to be something that you go, wow, life was a lot easier then.
Yeah, I think Sean hit the nail on the head. I think that's true for all of us. What he said, for me, I miss the traveling. It was a big part of it. I love my family, but I also love to get away once in a while. And to see South Africa, to see the continent, I miss that. That was packed into my early career, playing for under-20s and under-23s. So that's something that I really miss. And then I think it's been difficult for me to come to the realization that even as ex-footballers, we still have this ego that Sean talks about and certain amount of petty politics. And we've attempted to organize ourselves a number of times, and it's failed because of that, for small reasons.
Egos?
Egos. And I think players not realizing that you can't afford to have that attitude anymore. We've got to get together and organize. Certain organizations are not going to do it for us. So that's been disappointing for me, and that's been difficult to come to terms with. But we're still knocking on the door. We're still whittling down the group and deciding who's good for the group and who's not. And we'll get there. Because you hear a lot of the fans say, oh, why isn't Lucas, president of SAFA? Why isn't Mark Fish involved? Why, you know, so-and-so? But guys have got to realize that an organization like SAFA is very protective. You know, they're not going to just welcome us in. So you either take the long road, you either become chairman of your local club and then LFA and then work yourself up. And then in 20 years, you might have a chance.
Yeah.
Or you perhaps run your own parallel organization and do something good for the football industry.
You're talking in terms of a new players union, that sort of thing.
Or an unofficial legends club.
Yeah, I think the players union have done a pretty good job considering what they've come up against.
Yeah.
But I think you can form an organization which doesn't necessarily need to be in competition with the union.
Huh.
Yeah, so very similar to perhaps the Rugby Legends.
Mm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that. They've done hell of a well. They've actually been adopted by SARU. A lot of their coaching clinics have been adopted by them. A lot of good players have come through that system. So something similar. a one-stop shop for ex-players.
Mm, interesting.
Something similar. Taker. Hmm? What is it you... I mean, still, you, you obviously stepped away not so long ago.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
What is it you miss most about it?
To be honest, just maybe the thrill of maybe playing those big games. You know, having to go through the emotions of the game itself. But other than that, was I knew exactly when I wanted to retire. You know, I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I was done. So for me, it's the transition hasn't been that difficult for me. And it's just that at time, even when I was playing, I always felt that there's more that I can do, but just not just by playing the game itself, you know, because I felt like footballers in South Africa, we're never given a platform to actually speak our mind or to actually be individuals because we're not allowed to. And I think I'll say this over and over again. I think guys that actually played before us, they never created that platform for us. So now we never knew what to expect. So we learned as we go. And then now the perception is footballers are very dumb. Like the only thing that they can do is just chase the ball and that's it. So for me, when I was still playing, like I always say that, guys, I just want to be in a position where I'm trying to change the narrative because I remember having a conversation with Tembozoni years ago. He was scared to make interviews, to do interviews actually. I was like, dude, at one stage in your life, you're going to be at a brand and you're going to be partnering maybe one of the biggest brands in the country. And now you're in a position where you have to speak about the brand and address people there. And then if you're scared to do these interviews, you're scared to speak, you'll never know. And then you get to that position now, you're scared to talk. So the brands that can actually use you more. So you need to learn, even if you do mistakes, it's fine. We all started like that.
True.
Luckily, a year later, and then we started being Tembozoni that everybody knows, and then started being part of your Baller World, now started driving cars and all that stuff. So it's just that for me, I've always seen myself maybe 10 years ahead because I always knew that I wanted to be this guy. I wanted to do analyst in football and also just wanted to be a person that put other footballers maybe that are coming after me, like in a good spot, in a good position where we show our vulnerabilities. Like for us, for me to actually write a book and speak about the stuff that I went through, I'm trying to make you understand that, you know, the road is not as smooth as you think it is. And for you, when you're facing so many issues that you still are, maybe as a footballer, you're not the first one. It's just that maybe guys that actually faced the similar situation never came out and spoke about it. So now you must understand that, like Matthew said, you persevere, you do all those kind of things. The chances are you might even come up tops. But then again, for us, like with Tiko Modise, Spiri Tshabalala, René Rotsolonyane, we in the same era where our responsibility is also to pave way for the guys that actually come after us. And I think that's what we were supposed to do. I actually had a conversation with Pio about it. I was like, we need to be doing that because it's so sad, like you said, like meeting the guys that actually used to watch on TV, guys that you used to admire. And whenever you start having a conversation with them, you can feel that these guys never retired very well. They're still bitter about the game, this politics. And at that time, I don't have time for those things. Like, I'm not that I want money, but it's just that I'm at peace with decisions that I made, you know?
It's powerful, man.
Yeah, and they're so bitter and they're so angry that it makes them very, very difficult. It makes it very, very difficult to actually for us to try and approach them if we want something or we want them to be part of something because you never know where their mindset are, you know? And the worst thing that they're doing is after playing the game, they hide. They just disappear.
Yeah,
you
never hear from them again.
Yeah, and then 10 years down the line, then he's part of the Legends game, he's doing this. But also there's so much that you could be doing. There's so much in South Africa that you could be doing. And I think one of the things that people need to understand as well is if we need to tell our stories as often as possible. Mm. You know, we've got so much content in our stories and guys that play the game.
So this is why we started this, Teko, you know? This is the platform.
Yeah, yeah. People don't want to come out and speak about that. And it's so sad that we keeping these good stories, you know, these entertaining stories, you know, and the kids need to learn about them because of, if you go now, I'm a coach for under 16s, dude. Like when you go there, they think like, ah, Tiko Modise has done it all, you know, he has no issues, whatever the case might be. But if we tell our stories and then we show as well that we own our stories and then be proud of where we come from, the stuff that we're doing, and now be in a position where you can, you know, you're doing something different, or whether you're giving back, whether you incorporate, whatever the case might be, but there needs to be that continuity. And I think, like you said, like there's so much pride in the guys that play the game. they still feel like they're footballers as well. They still feel like they need to be, they know they're still craving the attention.
Sure.
For me, I've always said that I wish people knew the name, but not the face. I would still be good,
Sure.
you know, because of, I've never been the guy that always wanted to be known, but it's just that I've wanted to be the best that I could in the sport that I was doing. It's just that unfortunate that it comes with the face as well. But for me, is I was never driven by the pride. Even today, like I'm working with Matthew and you, Sean, as well. I've maybe this new era, you can feel like guys that are actually good with what they're doing. They feel better. They, you know, they open up. They relax. They're more nice, relaxed. But I was involved once, 2-3 months ago, with the legends that were playing the game. Dude, you just walk in, like you can just feel the negativity inside the room. It's so disturbing. I actually, after the game, I actually told the guy that invited me there. I said, please, Chief, don't invite me again. I don't want to be part of this anymore. Because I can't. It's just that, and I understand people go through the different stuff, but it's just that once you've retired for 10 years, dude, like I'm sure that at some point you need to admit that, you know what, I'm no longer the company that people used to know and stop 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be dwelling on the past and be, because it's very disturbing, especially for me when I go through the Laduma pages or Kickoff, whatever the case, you find an ex-footballer that play the game so well. But he's so bitter and angry, and he doesn't even understand anymore. He's lost into the game. So now he brings in his bitterness into the game. I find it very, very disturbing, because these are the guys that we actually looked up to.
Sure.
And now you must understand, as footballers actually reading this stuff, they want to know actually what you did, or what is it that you did actually to come through. And then now when you find people that are actually bitter and still thinking that they're still famous like they were 20 years ago, it's very disturbing.
Matthew, any regrets?
I think probably looking back, my West Ham trial, that was probably the closest that I got to playing in the EPL. I would have loved to have played in a more established league. At the time, Natasha Chiklis asked for too much money, and I really impressed Harry Redknapp, who was there. They were getting rid of Rio Ferdinand at the time. And looking back at that, you know, even my youngster, he's 11 years old, and he keeps on saying, "Ah, Daddy, you know, if it wasn't for Sundowns, you would have been playing in the EPL." You know, he's besotted with football. You know, he keeps on reminding me about that. And I always laugh it off. And it's just one of those things that I look back and I'm disappointed that it didn't turn out differently. But, you know, 6 years in Russia, Beggars Can't Be Choosers, also turned out pretty well for me. But that's, I think that would be a disappointment that I would look back on.
Russia, yeah. I would have bounced in 2 days.
Teko, any regrets in your career? Anything you would change?
I think one thing that always come is not having or given an opportunity to go overseas. Whereas I was convinced before I even joined the Orlando Pirates that players, they're always going to be given a chance to go overseas. And they had players as well that went overseas. OJ just left. So just left as well for Denmark. Chance at the time just left. You know, there was a couple of Okonkwo just left. So there were guys that actually just bounced. So that's the reason why I signed for Orlando Pirates, because I was told face to face that, listen, if opportunities come, don't worry, you're going to leave. And I was very, very... And then within the first year, I had the chance to go to Greece. They were like, nah, we need bigger footballing countries to come through. And then when they came through, now people start playing games. I think that was the issue. And instead of speaking up about it, I kept quiet. I think I should have spoken more about it. I think I should have fought my way out. I think that's the only regret. Like for me to test myself in those leagues, irrespective of where I was going to play, I just wanted to have that opportunity to play overseas, because I felt like I was good enough and yet I wanted to improve. And when that didn't happen, I think it killed me for like 2 years or so. I was a mess for 2 years. That's why I don't remember that 2 years, because I think maybe I played one or two games, because I was still fighting my own battles. And and I think it's a culture of South Africa, like they want you to have ambitions, but once the reality hits, you can't do that. So the certain teams, when you sign a contract, you must understand that this is like going to jail, my friend.
Wow. I wish that the clubs would just play open cards with the players. Like, just be honest and say, listen, this is what's happened. This is the progress. Trust the player to be responsible enough to handle that information.
Yeah.
You know, instead of hiding things, and then you build up animosity. Then players, that's why players these days, they don't want to go to training, and they go AWOL, you know, to try and force.
To try and force.
Which is not the right way.
Even Pessy did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. Like, you get there when this I need it, they're giving you all these nice things, ice cream, peanuts, you know, they tell you all these nice things that you want to hear. But when the reality comes, now you hear the offers. I think with Orlando Pirates, I think if I was sat down and actually spoken to properly, I think I would have understood, because of they never told me what they wanted to do, the reason why they they're rejecting all those form, those offers. But yet again, the saddest part was every email that was coming to the club, I was CC'd. So here's a boy from the shack somewhere in Soweto, seeing the numbers that are on those offers, dude. And here I'm playing in the national team with Matthews and them, and there's a big tournament that's going to come in a couple of years. I don't want to play for a contract when that tournament comes. I want to be secured now so that whenever the tournament comes, I'm good. I know that after the tournament, I'm going to the country that I'm playing for. Sure. That was my main goal. And when that didn't happen, it forced me to play different in those tournaments, and I never had a great tournament. So I think that area, that space where I was fighting, I could have been training. But I was busy in the office, coming in and out, not knowing whether I'm allowed. I'll go to training. And then Kroll would tell me, Chief, they said you mustn't train, you must go to the office. I go to the office, there's no one there. The next thing, tomorrow. Then you get called on Friday, and they say, Chief, you need to be in camp. There's a game on Saturday. You haven't been training for 2 months. And then Saturday, they put you in. You know, they threw you under the bus. And that was the same thing that was happening for me at Lano Paris. Now, the fans that don't know, they're thinking that because of the sponsorships and all that, now I'm big-headed, I think I'm bigger than the team. They don't understand that the first conversation that I had at Parktown, here's what I was told. Like, dude, here's the platform for you. You're in Bafana setup now. Just play the best that you can. When offers are coming, we're going to release you. Now, when I came with the offers, like, yeah, the Matthew Booth, you're Steven Pienaar, now they're in your head, they're telling you you must go overseas. I mean, we all have ambitions to go overseas. Mm. As much as we had ambitions to play for big teams when you're playing for small teams, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
But other big teams, once you have big ambitions, they stop you from doing that. So that's the problem in South African football. They don't want to see players progress. And once you become a player that actually don't come back to them and beg for something, they don't like you. They're saying you're arrogant. You think you're bigger than anybody else. Because they want you to actually, once you're done, like, can I please coach under 10? Can you please advance me 30 grand? That's what they like.
Mm.
When you become smarter, you become more independent. South African teams, they don't like that, especially big teams. It's a fact. We can check all these big three teams and tell me who is a legend that actually played for any of those teams that are still working today.
Mm.
Maybe either department. You can take Lucky Lukwadi. Now Lucky Lukwadi is an ambassador for Telkom, for this, for that. He played how many games at Atlanta Pirates? Before Lucky Lukwadi, how many legends played for the game?
Mm.
You can still go to Kansas Chiefs. It's very, very difficult. Okay, you can always say Dr. Kumar, but how many players that played with Dr.?
Mm.
How many of those? You know, you can go back to the, yeah, I would see my peak and all that. They're still there under 15. They'll never progress. Yeah. Thabo Moki.
Mm.
Never even had a beneficial game. You know, there's a list. There's a list, my friend. Even at Sundowns itself.
Mm.
When Ezra Munyandura retired, nobody knew that they retired. He never said anything.
Michael Manzini.
Yeah, Peter just came in and said, okay, whatever the case might be. Then
surprise Mariri.
All of a sudden, we never saw Ezra coming to training anymore. Yeah. And this is the guy that actually welcomed me to the game, welcomed me to Mamelodi Sundowns, making me understand the setup and all that stuff. And this is the guy that I was actually watching.
That's
with.
Good point. Sir.
So it is very sad. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
That's why you find it very easy for smaller teams to actually have players going overseas and blah, 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 than bigger teams. In bigger teams, they always want to have this player that is a brand that will make supporters to come and watch the games. But then again, they don't want to match the numbers that we've been given overseas, because at the end of the day, we want to play. As much as we play the sport that we love, we always want to make money also so that we can survive after the game.
Can I ask you a question though? So when you sign for a big team like a Pirates or a Chiefs or a Sundowns, is this not where your agent sort of earns his money? He's not just there for the pay there, but that contract that gets written and the details, there's stuff like if a transfer request comes in from Spain or England, we've got a release clause here. This is the you're not going to tie. Is that because it sounds like you were in the office fighting your fights?
Yeah.
Should there not be? I mean, when you listen to Europe and they ask the players about their contract negotiations, they go speak to my agent. I just turn up at training and they deal with that. There seems to be a gap where either the big clubs just go, no, we're not playing ball with the agent. Get the player to come in and sign on the dotted line, and that should be good enough. And they give you their word that the right thing will be done. But when it's not on the contract, when the time comes, the right thing isn't done. It sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake that I did also was not to have a buyout clause at the time. But the thing is, like, I thought my agent covered. You know, I'm covered. I know I'm going to play for a lot of Pirates for probably maybe 2 years, and then I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, when I started feeling like not trusting anybody, because I felt like Jasmine wasn't doing enough.
Uh-huh.
And then I started taking things, you know, on my own. I'm like, I'll fight my way out. And yes, I tried. Trust me, I fought with so many people that you're not even supposed to fight with. But I was fighting a good fight. I wasn't being rebellious or anything like that. I was fighting for the fact that I was told this is what's going to happen. Now it's not happening. what's the issue? Can we please, okay, let's come back again, let's talk. What's the issue? What is it that you want me to do? I'm giving you my all every single game that I play. Give me an opportunity. Because at that time, I'm fighting this. You know, some players going for trials, my friend, at Tottenham. Trials.
Tottenham.
Can you imagine what it does to me? I can't be given an opportunity. And none of the teams that actually wanted me, they always wanted me to come and do medicals and sign with the team. No trials, no nothing. You know, some players been given an opportunity to go trial to Tottenham. I never had an opportunity to go anywhere. So I must stay in Orlando Pirates and be what?
Wow.
Because there's nothing that at the time, the way I was playing, there was no way that I could play even better than the way I was playing at Orlando Pirates. I felt like for me to actually grow, yes, I'm giving this opportunity at the national team. Yes, I'm playing against these big countries. Yes. But for me to improve, I need to play that level every week. And I felt like Orlando Pirates, I can't improve. Because after, you know how difficult it is to play at the national team. You're playing, you might be playing Germany on Saturday. You're done playing Germany. You're going back to training on Tuesday. Come Saturday, you're playing against Baroque. You know how difficult that is for us? It's very difficult. I'm sure, Matthew, you've said it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because don't bring me into this conversation. you've made your bed, now you must sleep.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. You play Mandela Challenge, you play USA, and then Tuesday you play in Canada, and then Wednesday you back a lot of Paris, you're training, come weekend you play in Celtics.
Yeah.
Those are different. It's very, very difficult to actually all the time trying to adjust to play normal again. But for me, I just wanted to be playing in that level like Pinar was playing. Mm. And lucky for me, I was in a national team where 80 to 90% of the players that were playing overseas. So I would ask questions when I needed to.
Sure.
Like, how does it feel? You know, all the stuff. So I used to ask Skilo so many questions as well. So I wanted to be in that position where I'm playing difficult games every week. Yes, I'm playing for Orlando Pirates. Those are big games required for us to win every day. But it's not as big as EPL. It's not as big as Spain. And Spanish teams, EPL teams came, French teams came. And then now you're seeing the pool of players that are playing there. It's very ridiculous because at the time they said, no, France is not a footballing country. Look at how many players we have in France. So those are the kind of things that actually killed me at the time. But I needed to make peace with them.
Sure.
And sometimes gave me an opportunity to make peace about it. I think I started having maybe more peaceful about it after winning the first trophy at Sundance. I was like, okay, cool. Now, you know, the burden's off my shoulder. Let me just, you know, continue and see where this will take me.
Okay, we're gonna move this along. But if I can make a plea to any PSL players currently listening to this podcast and any former ones, is I think what Teko and Sean are trying to do here is open up a platform to tell your story and to be brave and to help the others, the youngsters coming up behind you, to do it better than you've done and to learn from your mistakes. And where you've done the right things to share that information as well. So we're going to send that plea out there. If you're friends of these two legends, friends of Matthews, please share this podcast and let us know if you'd like to tell us your story as well, because we'll definitely give you a shout. We're going to jump to the other spectrum now. And while we've been talking about life after soccer, we are going to talk about a podcast we do called My Starter Pack, where we catch up with current players, former players, and ask them about their firsts. I believe we've got Ryan Buerter.
Yeah.
Doing their starter pack, is that right, Si?
Yeah, we got a little snippet from Ryan talking about his first splash purchase as a footballer.
And he's quite a flash player himself. I believe he was on the cover of Men's Health at one stage. And I think he regarded himself as the South African David Beckham. I think that's right.
I
believe him and one of the Wayne Stanley twins have a gym now. So I hope they're not listening to us because they're a lot bigger than I am. But the guy could play. He had a hell of a left foot, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. He won PSL Goal of the Season once while at Morocco Swallows.
Very underrated.
He did a lot. I think, unfortunately, he missed the penalty for the under-23s, if I'm not mistaken, a vital penalty at one stage. And I think that hung around his neck for a while. But a great guy and a friend of the show. Let's have a listen.
My first crazy expensive purchase.
Signing in Turkey in the Premier League there and buying every member of my family a watch. Ooh. An expensive watch.
Very nice. I hope they all still have those.
They do. They're nice watches.
Yeah, so for the full episode, check out slradio.co.za. But yeah, Christmas time, crazy expensive purchases. Sean, sure. Any plans?
I'm going away to the bush, off to the Kruger. Teko, are you going to buy me anything or?
No.
No. Maddie?
No. No, we got no bonuses yet. It's not Christmas presents for the Soccer Duma staff. Certainly not for you two.
Right, let's move on. Car of the week. This week, I've chosen Didier Drogba's Mercedes SLR McLaren, which is only 20 million rand, which is not bad, considering Ronaldo's last, what was last week? 9 million pounds he paid for the Bugatti.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a lot of money for a car. Local players, don't take note.
Please do not do this.
Invest wisely.
It's frightening, eh? Moving on to what we all wait for is the joke of the day, don't we?
Before we get to the joke of the day, because this is probably the worst part of the show, in my opinion, is the joke of the day.
Horrid.
But last week, we are visiting a lot of young players scoring around the world. And we had Barcelona set a new record for a 16-year-old scoring in the Champions League. And then we looked at our own league to say, you know, how often do you get these youngsters scoring in the PSL, never mind in the Champions League. And I think we turned back the clock and we said that Steve Lekolea was one of the youngest. He scored, I think, at age 16 and 10 days. Teko, I think, was the one who pointed out that at that stage, he wasn't Lekolea, he was Mutsiri.
Yeah.
And nobody could really decide as to what really happened there. Why was there a name change? We've seen a couple of name changes. We went from Jabu Pule to Jabu Mahlangu, I think in a cleansing change of sorts at the time, is how Jabu described it. But we got it from the horse's mouth, and I was able to get hold of Steve, a good friend of Sokolo Dumas over the years, and we had a short chat, and I think Simon's going to cue that interview.
Steve Chopolekolea, how are you?
I'm good.
Good, good. Thanks for taking the time to chat to us. I know you're a busy man. So welcome to the Car Wash, which is co-hosted by Sean Roberts and Teko Modise. Are you a Teko fan?
Yeah, you know, Teko is a good player.
Great player.
He has level. There's no doubt about
him. I hear you. I got to ask you a question about Teko before we get into the real business. If it was an African Champions League final and Pirates needed a goal and they were awarded a free kick on the edge of the 18-yard area, who would you rather have take that free kick? Would it be Teko Modise or Steve Lekolea?
Obvious, my man. It's me. that is my territory. They call it Lekolea's place.
That's Lekolea's place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would push Teko off the ball there?
Yeah. You remember we play 11, what 11 at Ellis Park? You remember that game?
Yes. Yes, yes.
It was a free kick between me and Kalusha Bala. You remember Kalusha Bala?
Yes, of course.
I wanted to take it the free kick. He pushed me away. He said, no, Steve, I'll take it. And he scored at that free kick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Steve Lekolea would take the free kick for Pirates. Otherwise, how are you, my man? So for the listeners who are listening to the Car Wash, who are massive Steve Lekolea fans, because you are a legend of Orlando Pirates and South African football, what is Steve Lekolea doing these days?
No, Steve now want to open the academy for next year. I'm grooming the kids from the classroom.
Okay.
Especially the strikers, because here in South Africa, we don't have strikers. If you can see in the league, they score only 10 goals, 11 goals, which is the less goals. Okay. Even though I'm a midfielder, but I want to push the striker, because that is the problem we have here in South Africa.
Okay, so that's fantastic. So Steve Lekolea, striker academy of sorts. Please let Sokolo Duma know if we can help with any media coverage there, because it's vital that we produce strikers.
Yeah, you know, that Duma is a partner from long time.
Sure.
That's why I'm not hesitating when you say you want to talk to me. I'm always free for you.
I appreciate
because
that.
You also helped me, because you also helped me about my image. The people that don't forget me about what I'm doing. No.
Sure, man. Absolute pleasure. And thank you for that.
You're coming.
Quick question. What do you think of Orlando Pirates this season? What do you think of the style of play? What do you think of what they're doing?
No, I think they made a mistake by chasing away Mijo. Because Mijo is a good coach. But now they brought another coach from Germany. Mm-hmm. But we don't know him, that coach. We saw only the stickers of I was coaching in the previous teams.
Yeah.
But we must give him a chance, because we don't know about him. Let's give him a chance and we see four games, and then we see what is going on about the head coach.
What did you think of Rulani's time in charge as an interim?
No, you know, Rulani is a good coach, but the problem is Orlando Pirates supporters, they don't have attention. You know, even if you don't produce results, they can chase you away. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always advise everyone who's going to play for Pirates must be a strong mentally and physically, because Pirates, you know, they're a small team, they're a big team. Business.
I hear you. Yeah. All right, Steve, the real reason we're actually calling you is in last week's edition of the Car Wash, we were discussing that there's some very young players scoring goals on the biggest stage in European football. At Barcelona, they had a youngster, 16 years old, score a goal in the Champions League, which was an incredible goal. And then we started talking about young players in South Africa and in the PSL scoring goals. And your name obviously came up, because when you scored that goal, I think you were just 16 years old, was it?
Yeah, 15 against Interbucks at the East London.
Yes.
When I started to score a professional goal, and I was happy for that because I was the only young player in the place in that time.
It was an incredible record. But then Teko brought up a point and he said, but at the time, was it Steve Lekoleo or was it Steve Motsiri who scored that goal? And I think at the time, your name was not yet Lekoleo. That's correct, right?
Yeah, you know, that's true. I was using my mother's name at that time. That's why they called me Motsiri. Even now, the people still call me Mutiri because it's my mother's name. So I kind of run away about that.
Okay, so what we wanted to know is nobody really had the story as to why it changed to Lekoleo. What was the exact story? Why exactly did you change it? Why, what made that decision?
No, it was a time that I must use my father's name because there was some issues between my parents. But that time, my parents, they solved that problem. And then I use my Lekoleo's name.
Okay. Well, yeah. Steve, thank you for taking the time to chat to us and for clearing that up. And we will definitely have you on the Car Wash again. I hope you listen to the show. If you don't, download it and listen and hear what your friend Teko and Sean has to say. And thanks for being such a good friend of Soccer Laduma.
Okay, you're welcome, my man. And thanks for time for having me in the Car Wash radio station.
All right. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, man.
All right, so that was Steve Lekoleo from Inside the Car Wash, and we thank him for his time and clearing that up from the horse's mouth himself. Good lad. Do you know Steve?
I don't.
Not at all. Teko, you obviously,
obviously
mix with him.
Yeah, a lot of times.
Matthew, you played with him, eh?
Yeah.
Football?
Yeah, under 23s. No, good lad, and we often play a couple Legends games and socialize, social football and stuff.
People don't know how funny he is.
Yeah, no, he's quality. Yeah, good guy. Good guy to be around with.
Talking about a clown.
he's another clown.
Sean Roberts is up with probably the weakest content of the show. If you're a footballer with a joke, please phone in and let us know so we can replace this segment.
I'll get my whistle ready.
Can I retract what I said about him being the funniest guy that I ever now before he tells us?
All right, let's see what gold you got for us here.
All right, so what football club do sheeps like? Barcelona.
Ah, come on. Surely that's a straight red and a 6-month suspension.
Yeah.
For hurting our listeners' ears.
It just gets better every week.
That one was the worst one yet.
Yeah. Wait till next year. You've given us worse, but yes,
Barcelona.
Come on.
All right, boys, we end off.
Arcadia Shepherds.
We end off with our motivational quote of the week, which I get from all the footballers' instas, and this is from Mr. Dalen Clarkson. Invest in yourself, it's the best thing you can do. Wise words from a wise guy.
Yeah, no, that's what I call deep.
Deep. Clancy?
Yeah, and it seems to be the theme that Teko was talking about earlier. Invest in yourself as a young footballer and make sure you take care of what comes after. So, Matthew, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. Enjoy your time here in the Cape. And as I say, with your book, let us know what's going on. Let us know how we can help. Teko, thank you for your time and for the first year of the Car Wash. Appreciate everything that you've done.
Yes, sir.
First 8 weeks.
First 8 weeks. And
8
weeks, brother.
8 weeks.
First eight weeks of many. That's for sure.
That's longer than some coaches' coaching career. So we've done well to keep Car Wash going. Sai, I think Sean, obviously as well. Thanks for the
8 weeks on the Car Wash. Thanks for fitting in for SLU. You were unbelievably
thank
bad.
You. Thank you. I will take that to heart. Sean, Sai, I think it's time to blow the final whistle.
And Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to our listeners.
This is the Car Wash on Sokola Duma Radio. This is a Hangana Corn.
This edition of the Car Wash is brought to you by Gillette Skin Guard. Gillette Skin Guard is the razor you've been looking for. This is the first razor designed specifically for men with sensitive skin. It shaves hair and protects the skin thanks to its unique new Skin Guard technology positioned between the blades. Say goodbye to razor bumps and skin irritation with Gillette Skin Guard.